Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. Lots to talk about today on the show. Kevon Looney, a new Laker. Plenty of rumors flying about what the Lakers may do from here. He's Jovan Buha, Pete Zayas. I'm Trevor Lane. Happy to have you guys here. Make sure you hit the subscribe button if you haven't done so yet. And follow us over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen to podcasts. In fact, we could use some five-star ratings and reviews over on Apple Podcasts. So if you wouldn't mind, toss us one of those. Guys, how are we doing? Summer League tonight, starting off. Actually, I guess in just a few hours, technically. Las Vegas Summer League starting up here, too.
One of my favorite weeks of the year, Jovan. I know you're going to be heading out that way. It's been a few years since I've done it, but it's like Comic-Con for basketball fans.
Yeah, that's the perfect way to put it. And especially for Laker fans, right? Like everywhere you're walking around the arena, you're running into Laker fans left and right. So Lakers show out in Las Vegas. It's, 4 hour drive from LA, Southern California area. So it's going to be Laker town out there. It's going to be fun.
I know Jovan, you're heading out shortly after we finish the show. I'm going to head out first thing in the morning tomorrow to be there for the game tomorrow night. So I can't wait. Always an exciting and fun time in Las Vegas for Summer League. If you guys see us hanging out, walking around, come say hi. We're friendly people. Come say hi, and we'll talk some hoops. All right, guys, we got a lot to get into. We said last show, you know, we were behind on Super Chats and behind on some of our chat questions and comments. We were going to dedicate most of today's show just to get into the chat, get into what people want to talk about. But the Lakers did make one move, and that was adding Kevon Looney to their team. What are your thoughts on that? Jovan, let's start with you. Kevon Looney, now the Lakers, I guess, backup big right now, filling that DeAndre Ayton role.
I think it's fine. I get why people are, I would say, collectively underwhelmed, in terms of just replacing Jackson Hayes or even really DeAndre Ayton, where there was a moment there for a few days we thought DeAndre Ayton was going to be the primary backup. And then going from that to Kevon Looney is a steep drop off. But when you look at the market, when you look at what was out there, I don't think there is this massive opportunity cost that the Lakers missed out on. I know a lot of people would prefer Nick Richards. I'm probably in that same boat just because I think he's more similar to Jackson Hayes than Kevon Looney is. And he can be that lob threat where if you are running a ton of pick and roll with Luka and Austin, I think you should be giving them a pick and roll partner and a lob threat. So I get that argument, but Kevon Looney, I mean, elite screen setter, still a really good rebounder on both sides of the ball. I think was 93rd plus percentile last year, offensive and defensive rebounding percentage. And defensively, you look at some of his rim protection stuff, it's still at like a solid level, let's say. So my biggest concern with the move is I don't know if he could be an every night backup, and I don't know if his legs are still there. If you look at it, last season, he had one dunk. He had two dunk attempts, one dunk period. Only played 21 games. But even you go back the previous couple of years, he was 24 dunks. Like, and just watching the film from 2 years ago to this past year, he looks like an entirely different player physically. Yeah. And I talked to some people down in New Orleans, and they were like, we just don't really think he's a rotation guy anymore. And that's why he was collecting so many DNP CDs and playing behind DeAndre Jordan. So I get that, like, based on the market, like, he could be a veteran locker room presence, is a three-time champion, right? And I don't think he's that same player anymore, but just having that type of guy around with a group that is pretty inexperienced outside of a couple guys toward the top of the roster, like, I see the upside from, like, a locker room presence. But if we're judging this in terms of, like, is this guy a legit backup every single night? Or if Walker Kessler goes down, can this guy step up and play 25 minutes as a placeholder starter? I would say the answer to the first one is TBD. The answer to the second one is definitely not. So I would like the Lakers to still add another big as they reconfigure this the roster here. But we'll see if they're able to pull that off. Obviously, you got to get that starting forward first and foremost. But I would say it was fine. Like, again, you're looking at Nick Richards. I don't even know who else is out there. Jonas Valanciunas, he can't move defensively either. So it's, I think similar tiered guys. But Looney, to me, I do have some concerns of like an every night role. I just don't know if he can do that.
Yeah, I'm in a similar spot. He's, two, 3 years ago, I would have been super excited about this. I love players that can have a great game while taking one shot, and he's one of those players. And just seeing similar things to what your New Orleans people were telling you, Jovan, about just the way he moves nowadays. And he was never the most, fleet of foot type of player. He had two hip surgeries prior to his first NBA game, played one season out here in UCLA, supposed to be a lottery pick, and fell because of the injury issues. And just, watching him on tape, he's kind of glacial at this point. But again, like you said, still a great screen setter, a great rebounder even still. And more than anything, Trevor, I think it signals somewhat of a stylistic shift, because even in his best days, he was never a roll man lob threat, but a great DHO guy. I don't know if you guys heard McMenamin talking about, he was, the Looney was telling them, or his people were telling him, that we were going to kind of run some similar stuff to what Golden State was running. And both him and Kessler are really good at the DHO screen away type of style. That even though he's not the most significant acquisition of the offseason, I think he provides one of the biggest clues of how we're going to play. And it's going to be more toward the, like, AD, the hub. Remember before the Luka trade, how there was all that talk about playing through AD as a hub. So I do think that this is possibly a clue for us of the Lakers going in a little bit of a different direction beyond just the pick and roll.
Well, that's a great point, that that Kevon Looney can certainly fit into that role in a limited role, of course. He's not going to play a ton of minutes. He's 30 going on 45. That's effectively what Kevon Looney is, which is fine. Because I'll tell you what, look, right, this is, and by the way, congratulations, Austin Reeves, no longer the oldest player on the roster.
That's right.
But Kevon Looney, I think this is a sign of a couple of things. Number one, it's a sign that I think we're going to see, if things stay as they are, we're going to see a lot of Sandro Mamukelashvili as the backup five, which frankly is where he was at his best last year when he was with the Toronto Raptors. It was when he was playing that kind of small ball five role. I think that Kevon Looney is a nod to, yeah, we're going to see a lot of Mamu at the five. Mm-hmm. But I also think that Kevon Looney is a, let's get a good culture guy onto our bench, into our locker room. We've talked a lot about that, about the leadership space and all of that. I think Kevon Looney is a guy who's going to really fit to that degree. And also, you know, just throw it out there, I have a feeling this name's going to come up on today's show, but when he was in Golden State, one of the guys that he was considered a mentor to, it was one Jonathan Kuminga. I'm not saying that you bring in Looney just to make things a little bit easier for Jonathan Kuminga, but, you know, maybe something that doesn't hurt in the process that the Lakers are kind of, you know, navigating that situation. So I don't have an issue with this. I'm always going to go towards guys who I know, if this is going to be an end of the bench guy, if this is going to be a guy that is not going to be playing every single night, possibly, I want a guy who's going to be a good locker room fit, a good culture fit. I'm not worried so much about, you know, is this guy an upside player or anything? No, that's not what my end of the bench guys are really going to be, unless we're talking about a young player, a rookie. So being that veteran on the end of the bench, it's fine, no problem. Should Kessler or Mamu get injured? Yeah, that's where, Jovan, I think you're absolutely right. They would need to have another big in the rotation, because if that were to happen, I don't think you can lean on Looney to get significant minutes out there for the Lakers and expect to be successful.
Trevor, do you have concerns about Mamu at the five, considering our perimeter defense? Like, I agree with your point that this probably locks him into a decent number of minutes at that spot. How do you, and yes, that's what he played in Toronto, but how do you feel about that on this team?
Outscore him, baby. I think that's I think that's what they're doing. The best defense is a good offense. I think it's going to be spread them out, five out, driving kick, all that kind of stuff that we're going to see from him. I do have concerns. I've watched a lot of Mamu film, and he, look, I'll tell you this, the dude competes. When we're talking about high motor players, he competes. He will contest, he will do everything he can, but he's undersized for the position. And sometimes that is a drawback, and that affects you on the boards, that affects you in terms of rim protection. So yes, I've got concerns. If you've got a lineup out there that's, you know, Sexton, Reeves, Laravia, and Mamu out there, and then we can throw out, I don't know, I guess you try to put Jared Vanderbilt on the floor or something like that. Whatever kind of bench rotation you get, you could be in a world of hurt trying to get stops with that group out there. So it's definitely a concern. JJ would have to structure his lineups very, very carefully if he's expecting to hold up on the defensive side. On the offensive side, though, five out, drive kick, you've got some really interesting things they can do from there.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think I've been in the minority where when the Lakers signed Mamu, I viewed it as a five signing. And I think there's been this groundswell of like Mamu at the four. But part of me is like, if you look at his positional data, he's played nearly 70% of his time in the NBA at the five. And if you look at his defensive data, he's played in terms of matchups, like 70% of his defensive matchups at the five. So he's someone I view more as like a 5-4. I think a lot of people have slotted him as a 4-5. And so I did view him as the primary backup, well, you know, five when they signed him, which also was partly my initial, not like issue with the signing, but I was like, I like Mamo as a player. It was more so just like, well, you guys just traded all this stuff for Walker Kessler. Now you're also investing all this capital in like a backup five. I feel like you could invest that elsewhere. But I do see like he can play the four. And as of right now, he might be technically the starting four. I think it's between him and Jake LaRavia. But I think longer term, he's going to be someone who is the predominant backup five and then plays in some two big lineups.
I think so much of the Mamo at the four thing, it's just because there's nobody else that's occupying that spot right now. I mean, most fans are going to look and they're going to go Jake LaRavia, Jared Vanderbilt. Let's go with the more unknown. Let's go with Mamo as the as the starter. I think if they do get that starting level wing that they're going to put in there, that'll change, I think, a lot of the conversation around Mamo Kalishvili. But all right, let's get into some of our questions, some of our comments here coming in from the chat. We did have a couple of them come in before the show started. Cam Presley said, in my eyes, the Lakers have built out their future bench depth with intent to add starting defensive pieces in the 27-28 offseason using the MLE biennial exception and expirings. You can't build a championship team in one offseason. That one did come in. That was actually before our last show. How important is it that the Lakers, because this matters a lot for the Jonathan Kuminga conversation, how important is it that the Lakers keep access to their full non-taxpayer mid-level, Pete?
I think it's important. I do agree with the premise of the question, although I would throw in this trade deadline as well as another spot that they can add that talent. But yeah, the Lakers aren't done, and I do think that that's the approach that they're taking. I do think it's outscoring, baby, for now, and then adding those type of guys and being able to keep that. What's that going to be next year, Jovan? Like 15, 16 million probably for the MLE, that you can add some good talent there.
Yeah, I think this determines how you view the Lakers offseason, because if you view the Lakers offseason as currently constructed as like you got Kessler as your center of the future and you added these three players as your 6 through 8 players and you still need the two starting spots, I think it's a successful offseason because you've now built out, you have 6/8 of your top 8 moving forward. The issue, I think, is if you're viewing a couple of those guys as starters, and if it is like Grimes and Mamu as starters, that's where I start to have a little bit more of a critical lens with, like, I don't know that they are starters on like a championship team, and I don't know that they're starters on like a championship team with this construction. So I think that, like, if you want to take the optimistic take, it's like you built out your bench. You now need to go find the starters, and that's a multi-transactional cycle, and it's really more about 2027-28. If you want to take the more critical look, it's like that could be true, but you still need guys to start in the meantime, and if you are putting these placeholder starters in there, I just don't know how high your ceiling actually is. So that's where, to me, like, this finding the starting forward, whether it's Kuminga, PJ Washington, or someone else in that general tier range, like, that's vital to me in terms of like a swing factor with LA's offseason. Cause I think if you can land that second starter and then you have one more starting hole to plug either at the deadline next summer, I think you're in a much better spot than they currently are.
And that's a question that's coming in before the show from LeBronky, is effectively asking, if the Lakers were to land Kuminga, do they still need to go get another starter after that? Or do you just pencil in Grimes, and are you good with that type of situation?
I'm not good with it, but I think that's what just the timeline of it. And this is something we said prior to everything going down, is that they're not going to be able to plug every single hole, that if Grimes is that placeholder starter, that hopefully, and he's not that old, right? Hopefully he could earn that spot over the course of the year. But I do think there will be one starting spot that's just kind of filled by, and even frankly, I feel the same way about Kuminga I don't know that he could be a starter on a title contending team. I think he would have to prove that as well. And so hopefully one of them pops, but I ideally you fill one of those spots. But if one of those spots are like held by a placeholder, I'm okay with that.
All right, let's go to this one. The Wolf Carey said, if La willing to take the minimum for other teams wasn't being petty AF, we'd be a contender next year. Yovan, how does that sit with you? LeBron is willing to play for very, very little apparently with some other teams, which he was not willing to do for the Lakers.
This is like a 2 seconds left on the shot clock grenade you just tossed me here.
I figured you would like that
in my face.
Hey, we know you've got the shooting talent. You can knock down the shot.
I mean, I would say this, like I understand why fans are upset with the report that he's willing to, or coming from his camp that he's willing to take the minimum or willing to take less. I would say, I mean, I think it's complicated, and I think there are two sides to the story. So I like, for Laker fans, you're obviously going to take the Lakers side and you're going to view it from a Lakers perspective. I think that is doing a bit of a disservice to the LeBron side. And I think there's blood on both sides, in my opinion, like blood on the hands of both parties here. So I think if the Lakers approached their negotiation with LeBron a little differently and made him feel like more of a priority, yeah, that could have been in the cards here. That was not in the cards. The Lakers were prioritizing other things, and they had every right to, because they're trying to restructure this roster around Luka, around Austin, and go in a different direction. But I think if you were just thinking LeBron was going to sit there and wait till they did all their moves and then sign for the minimum, like I just didn't think that was realistic, especially with the history, right? Because I think it's just like, that's the part I've tried to explain to people, is even if the Lakers could offer more, but it wasn't like the full max they could offer, they had to sell LeBron at a discount where everyone else was going to be coming to LeBron with, this is the most we can offer you, and we're willing to trade player X. We're giving you the most we can give, and it's not as much as you want, it's not as much as you're worth, but this is the most we have. Or the Lakers were coming at it from a deficit of, well, we could give you the max. We could give you 50. We could give you whatever, but we got to give you 15. We got to give you 20 because we're trying to build out this roster. And I just think at the core of that, especially with the history of the last couple of years and how things shifted, I just feel like that was too much to overcome. So I get why fans are upset, and I'm not saying you shouldn't be upset. I just think that, in my opinion, is discounting the LeBron perspective of how he's felt treated throughout this process.
Yeah, Lakers would have moved differently if they really wanted him back. At least that's my position. I'm also, Trevor, a little skeptical. Let's see where it actually lands. I think it's one thing to say, yeah, he's willing to sign for the minimum, but he's somebody who's also, after, was it the Miami discount? Or he made it a point at one point of his career to be like, I am never taking a discount again, and I'm worth too much, and I'm not going to do that. So we'll see where it actually lands. I'm a little skeptical.
Yeah, Yovan, unfortunately, that did not affect your field goal percentage. You drained the shot. Well done on that. At least I gave it to you at half court. So if you missed it, then it wouldn't bring your overall percentage.
End of possession heave that doesn't count against the field goal. So I'll take it.
There you go. All right. So personally, I'm not offended by LeBron being in this spot right now. I know a lot of Lakers fans will look at it a certain kind of way, and I get the frustration. And funny enough, you look at the Lakers and you look at the way the roster is right now, and you go, there's a LeBron-sized hole right there on this team. He'd make a lot of sense on this roster. But I was kind of preparing for this. You know, if it wasn't this year, it was going to be next year. I think the writing's kind of been on the wall that there was a good chance that this could happen. The fact that there were the reporting out there that he was 80% coming back, and then suddenly he was 1,000% not. Yeah, maybe he didn't feel the love from the Lakers, and maybe there's stuff they could have done better there. But you know what? Both sides are going to move in a different direction. They're going to build this team around Luka. LeBron is going to go jump to whatever team he can. And I hope LeBron is awesome. I wish him the best. Hope everything goes well for him. I'm not going to hold anything against him. I hope LeBron is on a wonderful team that sucks every time they play the Lakers. That's the way I'm going to approach it. Hate the Kuminga trade. All right, let's get into it. Think there's a 75% chance Laravia proves the better option. Mamu is better. The promised starting role scares me. All right, let's dive into it. Jonathan Kuminga, the rumors that are out there, I'm sure most of you watching, listening right now, you've heard about what the potential could be in a sign-in trade. The Kobe Price had a great article out yesterday. Would be a pick swap, the only pick swap the Lakers have, and Jared Vanderbilt for Jonathan Kuminga. There's more than meets the eye here, because that is not the full evaluation of the deal. But Pete, before we get into the deal itself, what do you think of Jonathan Kuminga, the basketball player? Is he a worthwhile guy for the Lakers to go after?
I think at a certain price he is. I think he's a totally different talent level than Jake, who I do like, I think, more than most. And I like Mamu, but those guys are both backups. And Kuminga is, he might be as well, but he's got a level of athletic ability and defensive ability, especially that I've been watching a lot of Grimes tape, especially on the defensive end. And one of the things that I like about him is he plays hard. He moves his feet well. He's quick. He stays in front. He'll always get his hand up on a jumper. But he played this role for the Knicks a few years back. And this is something that Lakers and their coaching staff are sort of like, we would like him to be a little more toward that defensive specialist type of role that he played there. But during that year, he had to guard up a ton. Your Kawhis, your Jimmy Butlers. And he's just too small for that. And we've got Kessler also as an elite drop coverage big, but there are two parts of the drop coverage where ideally you've got a guard that's providing back pressure, and he's so small that he can't really do that with his length or with his strength the way that a guy like Marcus can. And so Kuminga's defensive ability to guard the bigger player, Jovan, that Grimes isn't going to guard and isn't going to be as equipped to guard, like, that's actually more my level of excitement. I thought Jake had a good year on the defensive end as well, but he doesn't provide the level of scoring ability that Kuminga has. And I think that's sort of the theory of the team, is get the best defenders you can next to Luka and Austin, aside from Kessler, that can also give you 25 and nobody would be surprised any particular night. And so Kuminga's ability to pair up with Grimes, I actually do like that idea.
Yeah, look, I'm not the biggest Kuminga guy, and I see the downside with him. I would just say that the Lakers have gone relatively all in with this group, right? Or pretty close to all in, that they're dancing with the sun a little bit right now. And so I think you need some upside swings. You need some things to hit. And if Kuminga hits, it's a massive win for them, especially, you know, depending on the contract structure, the AAV, all that stuff. But even if you're just getting off of Jared Vanderbilt for one swap, I understand it's your final swap until 2028. Then you'll have that 2035 pick at that point. But like, that to me, I was shocked. That was the biggest shock for me with that entire report, was that price. And like, I have heard Atlanta is a little higher on Vando than most other teams, because the Vando market's been cold. They've been trying to trade him going back to last season, and they just haven't been able to find a suitor. So if you could get off Vando for that price and get Kuminga, like, that, just even if it's like the same AAV, swapping Jared Vanderbilt, who at best is a fringe rotation player under JJ Redick, and at worst is just $12 million sitting there outside the rotation, you flip that into a starter, and that is a big win for your cap sheet, in my opinion. Now, my two things with Kuminga are going to be the mentality. Like, is he willing? I think he's got to embrace the Aaron Gordon, Andrew Wiggins, Mikal Bridges. Like, you're not going to be this all-star, all-NBA guy. Maybe you could be that type of guy on a bad team, but you're going to win 20, 25 games. Like, if you're going to be on a good team, you need to lock in and be that number three or four guy and do the dirty work and be the rebounder, the screen setter, the cutter, get out in transition, make open shots, and buy into the system, buy into the role. And I think he does have that upside to be that type. Like, Aaron Gordon and Andrew Wiggins were the third best players on championship teams, respectively. And it wasn't maybe like the role that they envisioned when their career started, but they eventually bought into, hey, I have to lean more into defense. Hey, I have to lean more into rebounding and leverage my physical gifts that way. Then the second thing would just be the shooting. He's been a below average 3-point shooter in four of his five seasons. So I do wonder if there's just a shooting limitation there. And he's a streaky shooter. He's an inconsistent shooter. So to me, I think that four needs to be able to at least be a league average shooter. And he's shown like some stretches he could do that, but more often than not, he's closer to that like 33-34%, where I would like that to be a little bit higher. But if he can buy into his role and he continues to develop as a shooter and really works on being a catch and shoot guy, I don't see why that there's not the upside for him to at least play up to that contract, if not exceed it.
So you're saying that at some point during the season, we would get a, they're trying to make me Andrew Wiggins and I ain't Andrew Wiggins quote. That's what we would get. I do.
At least that's better than Clint Capella.
Better than Clint Capella. You know what? The name initially I was going to go with was Nick Batum. I was like, who's the veteran wing comp to
analog to Kuminga? Yeah.
Right. But no, I do like obviously the athleticism. I like that just as a lob threat. My God, like, this is, Kuminga is one of those guys where you go look at the highlight reel and you go, oh, whoa, This dude's got some pop. This guy is a star. Good Lord. He's doing stuff that very few other players in the NBA can do. The problem is you actually sit down and you watch a game of Jonathan Kuminga play. You're like, oh, this is just like quick bursts. And that's what you see a lot of out of him. There's a lot of standing off ball. A lot of like, he really gets going. If he thinks he's going to get the ball, suddenly there's an increased urgency in the cuts that he makes. Where if he doesn't think he's going to get the ball, you see there isn't quite that same urgency. And that, you know, that shows up on the defensive end a little bit as well. He is lightning fast. His ability to get to the rim, which I think is something that the Lakers have really prioritized here. When we look at guys who can put pressure on the rim on this team, he can certainly do that as a lob threat for Luka. Yeah, I could see baseline cuts. He is going to hammer dunks over people. It's going to be absolutely ridiculous if the Lakers go get him. But I think we have to remember when we look at this, Jared Vanderbilt and a pick swap for Jonathan Kuminga. Well, why is this being presented as a, why when we've heard that the Lakers have like $10 million for Jonathan Kuminga, why would this be presented as a sign and trade? Well, $10 million could mean they're shedding salary and then going after him in free agency. In free agency, though, let's say they sign him to a 2-year deal with the player option, because you know that's coming. 2-year deal, player option. They would not have his bird rights. They would not be able to go over the cap by a significant amount to bring him back the following season. So you'd have some challenges there for him. If you're Jonathan Kuminga, you absolutely want it to be a sign and trade, because then the Lakers would have his bird rights. They would have to give him a 3-year deal in a sign and trade. And if it's Jared Vanderbilt as the salary going out, the Lakers can give him a lot more money that way too. So that's where, what do the Lakers believe? Do they believe that Jonathan Kuminga is going to realize his potential on this team, that he's going to buy into all of the things that you guys are talking about? If that answer is yes, then, I mean, Jovan just said it, right? They've already kind of gone all in, right? They've pushed some chips in this season. Don't stop now. If you think Jonathan Kuminga is the guy, get it done. Bring him in and off you go. My concern is that do the Lakers look at him and say, this is more a guy we want to audition, we want to rent, not buy at this point with Jonathan Kuminga. We just want to hang on for a little bit here and see how it all works out, and then we'll figure things out from there. And that's where I could see Kuminga saying, I'm going to wait and see how the market develops once LeBron picks a team. And that could be ultimately where we land with this. But for a team right now that doesn't have anybody at the starting wing spot next to, I have Luka as a wing, you know, defensively, Jonathan Kuminga's got some appeal. He's the only free agent that's out there that's potentially worth a starting job. So I'm really torn on this one, guys. I see the upside. I see the potential. For me, it's going to come down to, if I'm the Lakers, what am I hearing in my discussions with Jonathan Kuminga? What's he telling me? Is he telling me that he's going to play that role, that he's going to be the guy the Lakers need him to be? Or is he telling me he still thinks he's the star? Because the former, that's a guy that I'm interested in. The latter, that's a problem waiting to happen.
What do you guys make of the sort of reticence for the Lakers to go over $10 million or to make this deal that I agreed when I saw they're like, oh, we could get off Vando and it's only going to cost us a swap? That's pretty good. Like, for me, that indicates that they have some degree of alternative or some, because there is a gaping hole at the forward spot, that it indicates to me that it's not just Jonathan Kuminga or bust type of situation. And on the bird rights point, one point that you make, Trevor, about the player options is protecting against downside. I think the Lakers having his bird rights protects against upside in some way, where I don't want it to be a Malik Monk situation where Kuminga's got so much upside. Let's say he does hit, and we don't have his bird rights, and now he's getting $20 million from somebody else. We don't get to capitalize on that. If we had his bird rights, it would actually protect against him actually hitting and not, and then actually losing him after that. But what do you guys make of that idea of the Lakers? Like, you know, we'll see. We obviously, no deal's gotten done yet.
Jovan, let me throw this to you, because I know we were talking a little bit about what that all means for the PJ Washington piece to this too.
Yeah, I was surprised by the PJ Washington report, because to me, he's exactly what they need. And you have the proof of concept with Luka, which clearly with the Grimes move and the Hardy move, I don't think it was the driving force necessarily with Grimes. I think it's more so the skill set, like they needed that type of player. And Hardy, obviously, was more about saving money, getting the 2 second round picks. But there's a familiarity there with Luka, and they're trying to recreate some of Luka's former Dallas teams and just sort of that general archetype build with the roster. So I think that's been an ancillary benefit to how they've gone about their business up to this point. So PJ Washington checks that box. But like, the Lakers really need that that dynamic, rangy, athletic forward. And he has done that to basically the highest level of being that primary wing stopper in a team that made the finals and ultimately came up short. But I think there is something in that of it shows he could be the starter on a team that makes the finals. So I was surprised by that. I wonder, in thinking more about it, is it public posturing and are the Lakers and Mavericks quietly in negotiations and the Lakers are floating out, we're not interested in this because it'll potentially drive the price down or at least like show, like, you know, this could all kind of be a smokescreen for the Lakers trying to pursue PJ Washington, where it's like, we're in on Kuminga. We don't really like the PJ Washington price. And maybe that's its own negotiation tactic. Because if they're drawing the line at PJ Washington, I would just vehemently disagree with that approach because he's better than Quentin Grimes and Mamu. And he's also locked up to a 4-year deal, same timeline as those two guys, plus Kessler and Austin. So it's like you would have this, you'd get that starter. You'd have now, seven of your top eight projected guys moving forward locked in. And then you would just need that final either starting piece or piece to replace Grimes with the bench. And like, you'd be in a pretty good position. Mm-hmm. So if they're drawing the line in the sand there as like, this is something we're not interested in or the contract's too much, I just think that's a misunderstanding of the market, a misunderstanding of like what they need. And also I just think undervaluing how good PJ Washington is and how important his fit would be. Cause again, if you're going to have an issue with that contract, I think then I would look at Grimes and Mamu and be like, well, I would just have rather spent that salary somewhere else and prioritize like that PJ Washington archetype.
You know, that's interesting that you mentioned that in terms of it being maybe a negotiation point with PJ Washington. I mean, for example, the Lakers suddenly getting a second meeting with Jalen Duren and then boom, the Lakers are trading for Walker Kessler. Could there be a little bit of misdirection there? I think the other thing we have to consider is we talked about the importance of maintaining the full mid level for next year. If they were to lock into a deal for Jonathan Kuminga or PJ Washington, any of these guys, that could drastically inhibit their ability to actually have access to that non-taxpayer mid-level next season. We already saw they dropped the Mamukelashvili contract actually down. It dips down a little bit next summer to try to give them a little bit more flexibility. I do wonder how much that having that full non-taxpayer mid-level next summer could be part of the thought process behind the Lakers not wanting to, or apparently not wanting to take on this long-term salary.
But I'd be hoping next summer that we get a player as good as PJ Washington with the non-taxpayer mid-level.
Exactly.
You know, so get it done now. They better get a really good forward if they're out on PJ Washington. Like, in some ways you can look at it optimistically where they're like, you know, turning their nose up at him. Like, let's hope that they've got something better up their sleeve. We'll see.
It's kind of the, you know, the whole Mamu over Rui thing. Like, clearly they could have brought, I have a lot of Lakers fans to say, why they should have brought back Rui. Yeah, they could have brought back Rui for that money. They chose Mamukelashvili. That should tell you something, that they believe in him, and tells you something about what they think. All right, we're going to get to a few more of our chat questions and comments in just a moment. First, need to give a shout out to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. You guys can use the code HMA, play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks. The link is in the description down below. All you got to do is pick some of your favorite players on your favorite teams. The World Cup raging on. I'm going to go Kylian Mbappe. I'm going to say more than 1.5 shots on target. And hey, Jude Bellingham. Yeah, I'm going to say he gets at least one shot on target. What a game he had last go round. $10 entry fee, win you $21. If you guys want to get in on it, again, that code is HMA. Play $5, get $50 instantly over on Prize Picks, and you can find the link in the description down below. All right, let's go with this one. Put this on black for me this weekend, Trev. Consider it done. Is there any way we can do sign and trades for both Kuminga and Derek Jones Jr.? Now, he's already under contract, so it wouldn't be a sign and trade on him if we get Kuminga on a reasonable salary. Thanks for all the updates and breakdowns. Pete, what do you? We just talked about there's a potential for a pivot option here. If it's Jonathan Kuminga or PJ Washington or Derek Jones Jr., if you can get one of these guys, where do you slot Kuminga in the hierarchy? Like, what would your preference be if you had access to all three of those players?
Oh, that's such a good question. I like Derek Jones Jr. a lot in that I think he'd improve the team's perimeter defense. And one of the things about the combination with him and Washington is that Jones has a pretty wide array of players that he can guard, which is, you know, less true about a guy like Grimes. And so, man, It depends on what it would cost, and I'd be very skeptical the Clippers would make that deal with us in the first place. But I was skeptical that they'd make a deal about PJ Washington, and it sounds like we're the ones that are sort of turning our noses up at that. And so, I'm a little skeptical that that would get done, but gosh, Kuminga's the most talented of all of them. It's a matter of like certainty versus upside. I'd probably go PJ 1, Jones 2, and Kuminga number 3 on that. How about you, Jovan?
That's my exact order. I think with DJJ, you have a little bit more flexibility because he's an expiring contract, so you can renegotiate that this summer, and I'm almost certain it will be less than what PJ Washington's going to be making over the next 4 years. But it's just different, I think, different levels of utility, where PJ's a much better rebounder, especially on the defensive side. I think DJJ is a better offensive rebounder, but he's more of that like cutter athlete offensive rebounder. Mm-hmm. His shot is actually there percentage wise, but I don't think he's the type of shooter that defenses fear. He's the type of guy I could see teams putting a center on and just being like, all right, we're going to cheat off of him, dare him to beat us. Well, I think PJ's got more firepower offensively overall, can attack a closeout and get to the rim, and just more of a little bigger, a little sturdier. So I'd be good with either one of those. I would have those. I think there's a line of demarcation between those two and Kuminga, just in terms of certainty, where Kuminga does have the upside to be better than both of them, but he's got the downside to flame out or not fully buy into the role. PJ Washington and DJJ, I think, know who they are at this stage of their career, and they have a proven track record. So among the three, I would go like Kuminga. I mean, I would go Washington and DJJ in that order in one tier, and then Kuminga in like the next tier, especially factoring just all the uncertainty with the contract and just sort of his buy-in.
I'm in lockstep with you guys on that. Unfortunately, both of these guys are with teams that we have serious questions about how willing to trade with the Lakers they would be. The Clippers, of course, we know they're only going to trade with the Lakers if they feel like they're fleecing the Lakers. And the Mavs may be in a similar spot. We'll see. Technically, they participated in a trade at the trade deadline, or I'm sorry, at the draft. But that didn't involve players. So, we'll see ultimately where the way this winds up here, if either team is willing to. But my hope, guys, is that in the midst of all this Jonathan Kuminga talk, that the Lakers are taking whatever it is that they would have to give up to get Jonathan Kuminga. And they are pitching that around the league for other options. You need alternatives that are not just Jonathan Kuminga. They need to be able to pivot to somebody else. They need to get somebody, to be clear. Doesn't have to be Jonathan Kuminga. And if they can take the stuff that would take to get Jonathan Kuminga and turn them into PJ Washington, fantastic. Do that instead. I hope Jovan is right about this being posturing on the Lakers side in terms of the Washington, because he would be the number one guy on my list as well. Let's go with this one. Vando is going to be crucial. We can surround him with four elite shooters all the time. That's the reason why we pick Mamu over Rui, now Laravia, and connect for Kuminga. I mean, are we really? Like, we're probably slotting Walker Kessler into 30 minutes, 25 to 30 minutes. So how much time does that really leave? Are you going to run Mamukelashvili as your reserve five that entire time? And then are you going to tether Vando's minutes to Mamu's the entirety of that, let's call it 18 minutes that you've got Mamu as a backup five? Again, I think all of those things are questionable. So how much? I think there's a world where Vando does have more utility on this roster than last year's. I just don't know if that immediately jumps him up to a every night 20 minute a night type of guy, if the goal is to still have at least four shooters at a minimum on the floor at any given time. I mean, Pete, what is there a brighter future for Vando? And if so, what size of a role, is that for the Lakers?
If Vando's on the roster, it's funny. I take the opposite approaches. I would want to tie his minutes to Kessler's because of what I was saying earlier about Grimes in the drop coverage. Vando was at his best when he was guarding the ball from possession to possession, and we weren't switching when we were in Darvin's deep drop type of scheme. And it creates this vice grip where you got Vando with his length and strength pressuring you from behind and on the side, and then you were filtering him down into Anthony Davis. You could create that more with Kessler and Vando. And so I would want to actually match those two up. Whereas if you're putting him with Mamu, like the switching, Jovan, really negates a lot of Vando's utility because of how much we've switched the last couple of years. If you're on offense, are you ever going to be like, oh, I want Vando to guard my on-ball player? Like, no, somebody come up and set a screen and get Vando off of him, go stand in the corner, be a help defender. And so I think the Lakers are going to run a lot more drop. And if they do, like that I think would be Vando's best role.
I'm also an actions over words guy. And when JJ has had a healthy rotation over the last 2 years, Vando has been, you know, 2 years ago, he was tied with Jordan Goodwin for the eighth man role in terms of minutes. And then this past year, remember, LeBron comes back. Vando's a DNP CD for eight straight games. Yep. They get healthy again. Vando goes on another run of DNP CDs. So I think, like, the Lakers have still needed that athletic defensive wing. That they've not been like this lights out defense where you could afford to sit Vando even with the offensive limitations. They have needed Vando with the motor, with the athleticism, with the defense. And JJ has continually been like, I don't like this guy's game in my system. And they got into it a bit at the end of last season, and it felt even personal a little bit at times, in my opinion. And like, I just don't see it. So I think there's a lot of wish, like we did this last year. I tried to tell people when we were having the conversation about Rui versus Marcus for the fifth starter spot, people kept throwing in Vando. I'm like, JJ just doesn't view him as that type of player. Yep. He clearly showed that throughout the season. And I don't think that's going to change now. If anything, I mean, they're trying to get off Vando's contract. I think there's a reasonable chance he's not on the roster next season. So I think he might start off technically like slotted a little bit higher in the rotation than some of the young wings, but I would not be surprised if pretty quickly into the season, Cameron Carr and or Adu Thiro is ahead of Vando in the pecking order. So I understand the argument here. I think if we're like, you can make the case for it in terms of the strategy. I'm just looking, you know, taking a step back and looking at the big picture here of JJ has never trusted or liked Vando in his system. And I just think that's the reality of the situation, and we can wish cast it otherwise, but I just don't think it's going to play out that way.
Yeah.
I think Pete is absolutely right in terms of the defensive side of the ball. Vando would be great. But when push comes to shove, it's not what I would do. But when push comes to shove, what do the Lakers do? They lean into offense. That's what they've been. You look at the moves they made this summer. Have they landed the defensive pieces that we're talking about? Walker Kessler, yes. But the other guys, not so much. Look, we talked a lot about Colin Sexton. Was that addressing defensive concerns? No, that's an offensive player that you go add in. So I think as much as I would love to see them lean into defense more, I think the offense would keep Vando off the court. And I'm not, guys, I don't care how many workout videos get posted. I'm not buying Vando taking a step forward offensively until we actually see it consistently in games. I'm not holding my breath on that. I'm not doing that one anymore. We've hit Ben Simmons territory of, you know, oh look, he's hitting threes in, you know, in a rec league game at the YMCA or something. Yeah, I'm not going to go for that with Jared Vanderbilt. So until we see a shift there, and I like Vando. I like the motor he plays with. Obviously, he's a very easy player. From a fan perspective, to really, really like to see him out there on the floor because of the hustle that he plays with. But I think JJ has pretty much said what he thinks about him, but through what he's done, and that's largely not playing whenever he's had an opportunity to do so. If Kuminga is the wing of the future, we should rather allocate any future capital to run double big lineups. The NBA is going to prioritize size, and we should jump the movement and get a mobile big. It's an interesting thought because, you know, we have seen that a bit, haven't we? We saw the San Antonio Spurs coming into the draft. They go, what do? They go double bigs. They get Jaden Quaintance as their upside big, and then they get Terrace Reed. They're adding bigs to a roster that already has Victor Wembanyama, already has Luke Kornet. You've got teams that are stacking up bigs. Right now, Jonas Valanciunas is getting waived by the Denver Nuggets, and guess who he's connected to? The New York Knicks, who already went and got Andre Drummond. Now, is that going to happen? I don't know. He may go overseas. We'll see what happens. But the bottom line is teams are stockpiling bigs. The Lakers got Walker Kessler. Pete, should they be done here, or should they continue to? I don't know. There's much else out there, aside from maybe Nick Richards. But is this going to be have to be something for the future that they really prioritize stacking bigs on this roster?
So I like where this listener's head is at, and I would argue that the 30% of the minutes that Mamu doesn't play at the five spot is he's a prime target to be that mobile big at the four spot, at least on the offensive end. In terms of adding another big, I would like to add I keep looking at OKC's roster with envy, as many people do, but especially at that big man spot, like, So Thomas Sorber was my draft crush last year. I wanted Cam Carr this year, and Sorber was my guy, and then he got hurt. Like, if they need to get out of any money or anything like that, I'd love to send a second or two out to get him back. And because I think that this is absolutely the trend around the NBA. But especially in the context of what you just set up, Jovan, with Vando, part of the reason that he doesn't play Vando more is because of that shoot, pass, dribble offensive limitations, that if you go to that two big lineup and Kessler is really locked in as such a pillar of what we're going to do, that second big has to be able to shoot. And so I agree with your portrayal of Mamu being more of a five than a four, but I do think he provides a certain degree of second big type of capability for us as well.
Yeah, I would say that I think when people hear, like, I totally agree with everything you just said. I think when people hear double big, they just start throwing bigs out there. And if you are going with Kessler as that anchor, as that rim running five, who's going to be the primary pick and roll guy, lob threat, then that other big needs a level of defensive versatility and a level of shooting, spacing the floor. And just like they need to complement the skill set. Cause it's not just, this is not the 90s or 2000s where it is like two behemoth 7-footers who can barely move and are post players. This is like Hartenstein and Chet Holmgren. Both those guys can play on the perimeter to a degree. Hartenstein is a DHO hub, and then Chet, obviously, with his shooting and spacing. Wemby, if they go double big, they didn't really do it too much with Cornette, but I think that's a move that they'd like to do. And obviously, have been loading up on centers themselves. But, you know, Cat, just looking at it, you need a spacing big, basically. And so that's, I think, the key to this is it's not just find two bigs and try to jam them together. It needs to be one of the bigs needs a certain level of skill and versatility. This is honestly why, like, the guy I really wanted the Lakers to get with how things were shaping up, especially post Kessler, was John Collins. And I think he would have been a great fit here with the athleticism, the skill, the versatility. He could play at the four next to Kessler, go double big, but he could also play small ball five. And then elite athlete could be that lob threat, pick and roll guy with both Luka and Austin. Plus, he was a 41% 3-point shooter last year on decent volume. So I think that would have been a nice position. Obviously, he went for more than Grimes or Mamu went for. So potentially costs you one of those guys or maybe even both those guys. And now you're reallocating your resources in a different manner. But yeah, I mean, I think for the Lakers, if you go that route, it's got to be a particular big where they need a certain level of stretch and skill that some of the names I see people throwing out there don't quite check that box.
Right. It's not just about any old bigs. You need a certain skill level. I love the John Collins call up. I think he's going to be a great fit for Detroit this year. Sound Automotive Group says nearly all of this front office's blunders have stemmed from an inability to assess talent, then value talent money-wise. If true, valuing Kuminga over PJ due to PJ's contract is mind-boggling. If we're talking about apples to apples, we're talking about giving Kuminga $20 million a year for 3 years or something like that, and it's about the same as PJ Washington's. Yes, I fully agree. The difference is, what if that's not 20? What if it's 15 million? What if it's 10 million on Kuminga, right? That's where suddenly you start to look and say, okay, well, maybe you start leaning Kuminga at that point there. But I am confused as to why they are reportedly not that interested in PJ Washington. We had this conversation a few minutes ago, but what about the idea that they have an inability to identify talent and pay that talent the proper amount of money? Pete, have you seen that be an issue for the Lakers? Do you agree that that's their biggest problem right now?
Yeah, that was one of my biggest concerns about this whole summer of optionality idea, is that, you know, eventually you got to pick the players with the money that they chose. I think this is a bit harsh of an assessment. However, I do think they could be, for one, way too attached to your combo guard types who can score, who are neither ones or twos, between Lonnie Walker and Gabe Vincent, Kendrick Nunn. These are types of players that they've spent money on and exceptions on trying to add, I think, a certain level of ball handling to the team, to the LeBron and AD version of the team. Who's the best big man that they've gotten this decade prior to Walker Kessler? That's a position I don't think that they've evaluated particularly well. And we've seen multiple guys. You were talking about a Diabate the other day, and he was out there. He was a gettable guy for, you know, if you can scout that talent in the first place. So I do have similar concerns. I think this critique is a bit harsh, and I think that they've got like talent that's that fits together toward a certain style this year. But I do think there's validity in what they're saying here, and that like if you're passing up on PJ Washington and what you get back is Kuminga, it better be on a pretty good deal, because like I agree with Jovan's perspective that like you've got a that he's a really good fit for this team, and he's kind of done the job already that we're hoping that somebody could do there. Like, what do you think about the Lakers player eval over the years, Trevor?
Yeah, you know, I think there have been some very, very painful miscues there when we talk about the self-inflicted wound of Alex Caruso over Talen Horton-Tucker, right? We go back to that. You look at the Russell Westbrook decision. They've had a number of players that they've just chosen wrong on or given too much money to. I mean, hell, we spent a lot of the show talking about Jared Vanderbilt. And Vando's got a player option to the end. Vando got a four-year deal. That does not look so great in this moment right now. So I think that some of the players they have invested in have been incorrect choices. I think they haven't done enough to protect themselves against downside. Frankly, I think they did the same this summer. I don't think they protected themselves against downside. That said, if the upside hits, nobody's going to be too worried about that. We've talked a bit about that. But I do have some concerns with overall value on contracts. I think it's been a little bit since we've said, wow, that's a great deal that the Lakers got. They had Austin Reeves on a phenomenal contract, but that was because of NBA rules, not because of what the Lakers went out and negotiated. So I've got some worries there, you know, moving forward here with this team. If they can find positive value contracts, great. It's going to be a great sign, obviously, if the guys that they added this summer do hit. If they don't, then we're going to be saying, okay, it's the same old thing where they, you know, they identified players, but they overpaid in order to get them. I don't know, Pete, I want to go back to an era where you see the Lakers do something and you're like, whoa, oh, the Lakers are ahead of the curve, right? Wow, the Lakers pulled that up, and you want to see the rest of the league be frustrated, not feel like, hey, the Lakers got that guy, but they had to overpay to get it done. And then, oh man, look at the bargain that this other team got. I want to get back to a point where it feels like the Lakers are one step ahead, and we'll see if this summer's signings wind up getting us there or not. It's going to depend on how they play on the court, of course, but it feels like it's been too long since I've seen the Lakers make a move, and aside from Luka, and say, wow, the Lakers really showed their thing. They've got some forward thinking here. That's a brilliantly structured contract. That kind of stuff has been lacking, I think, in recent years.
This type of framing is exactly why this upcoming move that they make is going to say a lot about their ability to do that. Because one place where I do think they had some degree of forward thinking is how oppressive the apron system was going to be. This is something I know they identified 2-3 years ago. And that's one of the reasons that's the rationale for setting up this summer, is that looking at everybody's books around the league, be like, there's going to be a few teams in kind of a tough spot. And Pelinka talked about this after in the postseason press conference of like, hey, we think there are teams around the league that are going to have to trade some guys, and setting themselves up to be the only team in the league that had that much cap space, that like they have to capitalize on that now. But I do on paper believe that there was some forward thinking there, but that's got to end up in the sort of like, oh, we traded Vando and we got a starting forward and we didn't have to trade a future first round pick simply because they evaluated the situation correctly, that other teams were going to have to move off money. But so for me, this next move right here is really going to be the next best chance for them to do exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. Do you think, Pete, that they've capitalized on that situation based on what we've seen them do so far?
Not yet. No, yeah. I think that I'm on one hand, like Walker Kessler, Mamu, and Grimes, they add up to the 50, 52 million, whatever it was that we had, in terms of like Kessler's a $30 million player. I think
sure.
Grimes, like all these guys are within at least a couple million of what I thought their market value was going to be. And so like, I don't think that they have capitalized on it from a like Trevor, you're not going to get super undervalued contracts, the type of deals that you're talking about where you're like, oh man, Lakers got a great deal here. That doesn't happen in free agency that often, because from a player's perspective, especially if you're under the MLD, you got a whole league that you just take the best offer. You have, it has to be really a rare find in order to be able to be in that type of spot. So Jovan, I think that this time upcoming is a better opportunity than the sort of free agency run they've been playing in so far.
I agree. I think when you have an opportunity, you just have to take it. With the new CBA, there's no guarantee that the next situation is going to be better. I think the Lakers have actually been victims of that, of I mean, as Trevor has put it so aptly, the can kicking, right? It just, but I think there's been an element of like, oh, well, at the deadline, the price will be lower, or like this player might shake loose. And I don't really think that's how it's played out. Like it played out in their fortunes with the Luka trade, right? But I think that was this anomalous situation that it was unforeseeable and was just, you know, it existed in its own universe. But outside of that, I guess like the DFS situation was a situation where it was a player they had been pursuing or in conversations with for a year or two, and finally the price dropped below a first round pick. They were able to attack on that. But I feel like there has been this like kind of always selling on the future of the price will drop, someone else will be available, we'll build the roster later. And I think now is that time to do it. And that's where I think like they got to go get that starter. It doesn't have to be Kuminga. It doesn't have to be PJ Washington. It doesn't have to be Derek Jones Jr., but it needs to be someone who I think is better than the current iteration of the roster and properly slots guys in bench roles. And then it's like a legit starter.
Jovan, you've called this offseason a success because the arrival of Walker Kessler. If the Lakers from here add Zaire Williams and stay as presently constructed heading into the season, would you say the same?
Yes. I want to be consistent in my analysis here. So I try to be as consistent as I can. So I firmly believe that like the key for the Lakers was to lock up at least one long-term starter, ideally two, but at least one. And they went all in. They got my top target, just period, on the market in terms of like a realistic guy that they could acquire. They got that guy, and they unloaded the clip. So I said it right after the Kessler move. I've been critical of them for not unloading the clip for years. And so they finally did that, and I want to give them their proper credit for that. Where I've had more of an issue is, I guess, like the ancillary moves that they've made along the periphery of the roster. I just haven't agreed with them, or I felt like they have overpaid either in the form of AAV and or player options. I think the Grimes contract and the Mamu contract, based on how much they're paying them, they shouldn't have player options, or they should be at lower AAVs with the player option, but it shouldn't be both. I think they're paying them at like the top of their market value plus giving them player options, which to me is just bad business from a contract salary cap perspective. But I would be disappointed if that's how it plays out, because I would feel like they wouldn't have a chance at a championship this year, in my opinion, or maybe like a 1% chance. I think it would be very, very low. So from a championship and going for it this season perspective, I'd be disappointed. But I'm also trying to balance kind of the short term with the long term vision. And landing Kessler is a huge domino. He's like the most polarizing one, where it's starting to me like the national media, I feel like, is higher on the Lakers' other moves than I am, but they're far lower on the Kessler move. And I'm the opposite. I love the Kessler move. Yeah. The other moves I'm a little bit shakier on. But the Kessler, like the whole offseason is on Kessler, right? Like Kessler has to be 90% Rudy Gobert for this to work out, like at a minimum. And so I think he could do that, but obviously we'll see in a few months how it looks.
Same question to you, Trevor. Like, I've been operating under the assumption that they're going to get that starting forward, and so my grade would certainly drop if they don't. Like, if they just sign a Zaire Williams and go, hey, we'll do something at the deadline or next summer, like, how do you feel about that?
Yeah, I would not feel good. I would not be happy with that. I like the Walker Kessler addition a lot. He was number one on my list of center targets. But the problem with going into the season with that mindset is we've done this before. We've seen this before. We've gone into seasons now, multiple seasons, where we say, well, you know, okay, they've got a big problem here, but maybe they'll address that at the trade deadline. And then invariably what happens is the Lakers wind up having to go on this hellacious run post-trade deadline, post-all-star break, pedal to the metal in order to get to the seeding that they want, and then they start to run out of gas come playoff time, or injuries, as we saw this year, start to pop up. I want to see the Lakers building chemistry from day one, especially because they've already wiped the slate clean. They're bringing in so many new pieces. You are changing up so much on the fly. That's going to take time to develop chemistry. I want to see a team that on paper we look at and say, you know what? Everything may not be perfect. We're going to learn some things on the fly, but at least the puzzle pieces are there right now for JJ Redick to assemble them. I don't want to go into it handing JJ Redick a puzzle and saying, well, it's missing a few pieces. Maybe we'll find them under the couch at some point, but you go ahead, coach, and try to sort things out, and then we'll see where things go from there. I want to see a team that is well-constructed and ready to go from opening night, because I think they're going to need all that time to get these guys on the floor together rather than trying to make changes midway through and then somehow scramble to get ready for the playoffs. So I would not be thrilled if it's, you know, a Zaire Williams and you don't have a starting level wing in there and you're just kind of hoping somebody could step up. I don't think that would be enough. To me, Pete, I look at it like this. You've done all of this. You've stood on conviction, mm-hmm. right? This is what you've done. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with the contracts, but you said, Mamu, that's our guy. You made a choice. You went and got him. That is our guy. That's the guy we believe in. Quentin Grimes, we believe in him. We gave him top of the market, 4 years, player option. Okay, you believe in him. Why stop now? Why go all the way to the edge and then stop? That to me makes no sense. So I think I would not consider the offseason a success if they don't land a starting level wing.
Amen to that. Very well said. If you're in for a penny, you're in for a pound.
All right, let's get to...
I just want to add one thing quickly. So I think it's a success in like a binary perspective, but right now I have them as a B. So like it's not like this... I don't have them as like an A-plus offseason. I have them as a B. If they maybe stand pat, I might drop it to a B-minus, but like to me, it's like you at least achieve your highest objective. Yes. You did not achieve your objective, though, in the short term, I would say, of like building a championship-level roster, and then obviously... we see where they go from there in terms of the deadline and next summer. Yeah. Just wanted to add that kind of follow up.
No, yeah, you're absolutely right. You're saying a success. I'm saying not a success. We're really not very far apart in that. Mm-hmm. In that though, when you add in the nuance. Okay, we have a few more that we're going to get to here. I know Jovan's got to get out to Summer League shortly, so we'll go for just a few more minutes here, but. Do want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, and that is SeatGeek. You guys can check them out. We'll be right back in 1 minute.
So I'm moving to Florida in a few weeks, and a couple of weeks after that, it's my girlfriend's birthday. She loves live music, so I want to take her to a concert, but I've never been to any of the venues out there. Which is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. Major League Baseball is in full swing, and you can now get World Cup tickets on SeatGeek. SeatGeek has a great feature that rates these tickets on a scale of 1 to 10, with the green meaning that it's a better deal, and the red meaning that it's a worse one. This helps me out a ton looking for the best tickets at venues I've never been to before. Plus, every ticket is backed by the buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use COLLECTIVE10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with the promo code COLLECTIVE10. Make sure to click the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
All right. Again, thank you to SeatGeek for sponsoring the show. The more time passes, the more I don't think Jonathan Kuminga to LA happens. When Braun signs with a team, the teams are going to line up to pay Jonathan Kuminga. Even Trev said it, now or never. Yeah, that's the one thing. Jonathan Kuminga can look around the market and go, hey, Lakers, there's nobody else. It's me. And that's it. There's nobody else out here in free agency. So let's get a deal done. I do think he's attempting to leverage that and get, if this turns into a sign and trade, there's a world where Jonathan Kuminga gets everything, where he wins on every front, where he gets the opportunity, he gets the starting job, he gets the LA spotlight, and he gets the money in a longer term deal, especially if we're talking about a 3+ year deal. If it doesn't involve non-guaranteed money, if I'm Jonathan Kuminga, I'm very much trying to push the Lakers to do this as a sign and trade and not just sign him in free agency. And I'm trying to use that market scarcity against him. I don't fault Jonathan Kuminga. Nope. As this is what you have to do. This is the game you have to play. But the question is, can the Lakers find an alternative? I think that's going to be key here in this negotiation. Pete, where are you at? Do you think this ultimately gets done?
I'm a little skeptical just because the way the Lakers are moving, it sounds like they feel like they have alternatives. Yes, he's the only real guy on the unrestricted free agency market, but there are a couple of guys out there between Watson and Mathurin, PJ Washington we're talking about, and what happens in Denver. They're so close to the apron. You've got Christian Brown and Cam Johnson. Spencer Jones might not be a starter level guy, but he's a guy that I like that I think will be hard for Denver to keep on top of everybody else. So I do think that there are some forwards on the market, Jovan. They're just not unrestricted free agents.
Yeah, I think some, you know, look, sometimes there's a lot of smoke with the Lakers, and there had been Kessler smoke. It started to be more Durin smoke. I think that was a smoke screen at that time, mm-hmm. right? With kind of the way that all played out at the end. But it was already reported that Grimes and Mamu, like, that was happening before they came to terms with Kessler. And then immediately after the Kessler trade, you see the Fleury moves. They do those two things, then they go sign Colin Sexton. So I think a lot of times Lakers move in silence. There have been some scenarios in which it's been telegraphed a bit. Like I think about the Russ trade eventually, like when they were getting off of Russ, it was clear that they were going to trade Russ. It was just a matter of like, what, you know, who are the other two teams in the deal to get off his salary. But what I will say with this, and I wonder how the Lakers feel about this, because I've been thinking about this a little bit more with how things are playing out. If you go back to the Kuminga situation in Golden State, there was a lot of leaking from his camp and sort of them playing the media game and mm-hmm. sort of, you know, a lot of details coming out that seemed to be more so them trying to angle the public in a certain way. It feels like that has happened a lot this summer. So if the Lakers do go forward and end up trading for him, signing him, whatever, I just think they got to be careful how they navigate that situation, because it does feel like it can get a little messy at times with his camp and how aggressive they are with some of the signaling to the media. And that's something that, like, every agent plays the media game to a degree. I'm not saying that that is not how this goes, but feels like they've been a little bit more aggressive with it in terms of trying to shift the public narrative. And it's just something to consider when you're potentially going into business, moving forward.
What's been out there so far, pretty sure the majority of that's not coming from the Lakers, right? Like that's pretty clear with all of this. Hey guys, big fan. I really hope the Lakers aren't done. PJ would be great. Would you guys give up all the remaining draft picks for him? So if the Mavs said we need the pick swap, the 3 second rounders, and then we'll take on, you know, matching salary or something in order to make the money work on something like this, would you guys go that far to get PJ? I know we all have him at the top of our list.
It depends on what my alternatives are with the Brown, Johnson, all of those guys. And that the reticence about the length of his contract, that's a real thing. Now, it certainly rings a little bit hollow when you're giving out 4-year deals with player right. options in that fourth year to other players. And then there's this already established proven guy that's like, what the heck's the problem? But from a trade value standpoint, Jovan, that usually knocks down a player's value a little bit. And so I would do it just from I think you go out there and you finish the job and get the best player that you can. But I do think that there's some negotiation here that, yes, if you have to, but I think the Lakers have a little bit of leverage there.
I think the general rule of thumb is that 3 seconds is roughly equivalent to a first. And there was the report from Mark Stein that Dallas was open for business with both PJ Washington and Daniel Gafford. They're looking for first round draft capital. No one has been biting at that. So maybe if you are putting the 3 seconds on the table, that's roughly equivalent. That meets their price. I've been saying the last couple of weeks, I don't think the Lakers and Mavericks won't trade with one another, but I think if you're Dallas, there is an optics part to it where yeah. I feel like you have to walk away from the deal at least with it like universally considered a neutral trade, if not slightly a trade in your favor. I don't think you can lose the trade again with the Lakers. Like I think Mavericks fans would just riot at that point, and deservedly so. So I think if you get 3 seconds for PJ or 2 seconds on a swap or something like that, you could walk away as Dallas being like, we got a solid return for him. And then if you're the Lakers, I think the key would be ideally retaining one of the 4 remaining draft assets. I think you could do 2 seconds and a swap, 3 seconds, I guess those are the 2 combinations, but some form of that where you retain one of the things just so you don't fully empty the cupboard here. But yeah, I mean, I guess if it really came down to it and he's your best option and it's like Kuminga ends up going elsewhere, you don't really like what's out there in the trade market, if it's really just all in on PJ or nothing, I would lean all in, but I would ideally like to keep 1 or 2 assets out of that.
I feel so much better about this team if PJ Washington was on it. Mm-hmm. If you had that role filled, mm-hmm. that would make such a difference. But I agree, you want to at least retain some type of asset in the deal while understanding that the Mavs are going to want a lot. Lakers, stop relying on opportunity / image rehab. That's where, you know, Pete, you mentioned it. You don't want to be in the Malik Monk situation all over again, where you get a guy, he does, you get him on a below market value deal, but the guy gets to use the LA spotlight for a year and then cash in on a bigger deal after that. And then what you really don't want to do, this is the spot you don't want to be in if you're the Lakers, is you give up something in order to get Jonathan Kuminga. And then you're in a spot where you're not able to retain him. Now, again, if you were to sign a trade, it would need to be a three-year deal. But still, there's ways to get around that through non-guaranteed money and everything. You really don't want to give up stuff and then find yourself in a spot next year where you still have to go find the wing, and now you have less stuff to give. That's the nightmare scenario.
100%. It can't be both of those. I think just the fact of the matter is they went into this offseason with more holes than they had assets to fill. And so we were always going to end up at a spot where you're hoping for a good player at and giving them the old opportunity and image rehab pitch. I would argue, though, that you don't really rehab your image with the Lakers as much as we would like them to. I've got a wild stat for you guys. I said this on the LFR pod today. Did you know that the Most Improved Player Award has been around since 1986? The Lakers have never had a top three finisher in the Most Improved Player Award in the 41-year history of the award.
Wow.
Yeah. Because nobody comes to the Lakers and everybody goes, wow, I like that guy a lot better. Now, meanwhile, guys like Julius Randle and Brandon Ingram leave, and everyone's like, wow, they're not so bad after all. And they win no damn award, right?
The media hates the Lakers.
That's it. Right? That's what it is, man. They don't vote. So the whole idea of like that you can come here and people are going to think better of you and you're going to go get a bag. We just had two starters in Marcus Smart and DeAndre Ayton have pretty good years relative to their contracts for sure. And they didn't see much of a financial benefit from that. So I agree with Ryan's point that like Lakers got to stop relying on that. But when you have more needs than you have assets to really to fill them, at some point you're going to be hoping you're going to be making that pitch to a player.
All right, let's go here. Too much talk about not keeping last year's team with 60% of the year, the same problem versus elite teams. Mm-hmm. I'm fine changing the team. I don't know that it's so much like just not keeping last year's team. It's you had a path to cap space. You got there, but the path to getting there was losing guys that were useful for your team versus losing guys who were not, with the exception of perhaps Maxi Kleber, right? So I think that's it. And then on top of it, I think it's been compounded because what have Lakers fans seen? You lost Rui. You lost LeBron. Right? And all we're seeing is, oh man, that's all it took to get Marcus Smart to your point, Pete. Oh man, that's all it took for Luke Kennard, right? These guys are not only leaving the Lakers, but they're leaving the Lakers and signing deals that Lakers fans go, oh, I would have liked that contract for LA, right? That I think is what is driving some of this. It's not just, oh, we didn't want to lose all these guys. It's losing those guys and then seeing them sign perceived below market value deals. Yeah. With other teams, it'd be different. I've seen a lot of Raptors fans that are saying, "Mamu, great, congratulations. We couldn't get there money wise, but we're happy that you got that much money." That's where I think a lot of Lakers fans would be. If Luke Kennard got $13 million a year, we'd be saying, "All right, well, the Lakers moved on. He got his bag. Congratulations to him." Mm-hmm. Instead, it's Luke Kennard got $6 million. Man, that kind of would have been a good contract for us, right?
Yep.
That I think is adding to this whole situation.
I think the other thing for me is that, so I like the premise of this point, and I think this is a totally fair point of the status quo wasn't going to cut it, even if you just added Walker Kessler. I mean, it would have been interesting to see what that looked like with Walker Kessler and DA's place with last year's group, right? But I think my bigger issue with the sort of input versus output with the current roster is that I essentially viewed it as, you had one starting level player in LeBron and everyone else ideally slotted as a bench player. So we'll say Marcus, Rui, Luke, Jackson, one starter, four bench guys out. And I think you're bringing in one starter and multiple bench guys. So I would have liked that, like the shift to have been, can you add a player better than like the Marcus Rui tier? And I don't even know if Quentin Grimes is, but like, I would say based on last year, I think you would actually go Marcus Rui, Quentin Grimes, or maybe Grimes versus Rui is a conversation. But I think at at a minimum, he's on the similar tier to those guys, and he might have actually just been a worse overall player, especially if you look at his play, 22 minutes a game, average 6 points a game in the playoffs. And I know some of that's usage, role, whatnot, but like if this is the guy that's replacing Rui, just average 18 points a game. I know he played 38 minutes, so there's you know a minutes difference there, but it's like it's not guaranteed that Quentin Grimes comes in and gives you exactly what Marcus or Rui did, just from an impact standpoint, to say nothing of their role. So I would have liked to have seen the shift been, okay, one starter and four bench guys out, two starters and two or three bench guys in. But right now, I think you basically just reconfigured the same problem of, as it stands, you are slotting two bench guys in as starters. And that's where I think the Lakers come up short against the best teams, is like OKC has like eight starting level players to say, you know, right? And then they go like 12, 13 deep. Lakers are barely getting to a fourth starting level guy. And I just think that's right now the issue with the roster.
I'd feel way better about this team based on the framework that one of our listeners gave earlier of they really filled out their bench and that they've got that, you know, 6 to 8 filled this offseason. But I was just having that same thought, Jovan, of like, we really only added one true blue starter to this team. And I was hoping for two. And even if we get Kuminga, he still fits in that same slot for me where, and that's part of the excitement, Trevor, of a guy like PJ Washington. That's a starter in the NBA. That's a starting caliber forward. And I can write that in pen. And I don't really feel that way about Kuminga.
Yep. I agree 100%. That's a challenge with this roster right now. And that's where you're going to have to hit on some, you're going to have some guys that perform above what they've done historically and jump into that starting role. Maybe that is, it's, I think most probably it's Quentin Grimes, but we'll see if somebody else can make that leap as well. I want to kind of cherry pick one of these here to wrap things up. I know Jovan's got to get on the road here, heading out to Vegas. How about this? JJ is going to out coach everyone this year, and we will have a good defense and great offense. Lakers 27-28 chance. Well, I love the optimism there. LaRavia is only 24. Why not hope his shot gets better? Gafford, Diabate, or Sharp. You know, we've talked a lot about player growth. We've talked a lot about, can Jonathan Kuminga fill in a role? Can the, you know, what about the trajectory that JJ Redick is on? Pete, where are you at on JJ? And could we see a step forward from him as a coach? And could that be part of the success dynamic for the Lakers?
I love the premise of this question. And I think this is the first team that Redick is going to be able to coach that is basically the type of roster that he wants. A lot of times when you're a coach, you don't get to pick the guys that you have and you just show up and this is the best we can do with the guys that we have. But this is, I think, stylistically, and even like I was saying earlier, that the Looney signing is a bit of a clue of us going more toward that DHO five out type of style, the Mamu signing as well, that I think, Jovan, this is the first time he's going to have the ingredients that he really wants, while the last couple of years it's been sort of like making it work with the talent that you have.
I've long said that JJ's ideal roster and playing style is the 2024 Celtics. And you know, I think he really, that's partly why he You're resonates right. so much with mm-hmm. Joe Mazzulla. I think the interesting thing will be, I think the Lakers have underachieved offensively during JJ's 2 years as a head coach and overachieved defensively. So like, I think he's already in the conversation of like top five defensive coach in the league. And I think he's done some really smart, shrewd things where you look at how he defended Jokic 2 years ago in the regular season. OKC stole that playbook. You look at how he guarded Shea in the second round. San Antonio stole that playbook. Like, I think JJ has been, in terms of locking in against a specific offense or a specific star, he's already ahead of the curve and like in a really impressive way. The issue has been he's not been given the best ingredients. Right now, we have not. We did see it with AD. But it was a couple months, JJ, it was first couple months of coaching. So I don't think it was quite, and then it started to click and then AD went down and then they ultimately traded him. So this will be his first time, I think, with some actual experience under his belt, having that rim protector. And I'm really interested to see how he approaches that, because the thing with JJ has been, he has preferred that switching versatile mm-hmm. scheme and not as much the more traditional drop coverage. But now that you have a Kessler, you do need to take a page out of the San Antonio book and try to be like, how can we keep Kessler around the basket at all costs, kind of similar to Wemby, and leverage your perimeter defense or try to best leverage your perimeter defense with your tools. So I'm really fascinated to see, like, offensively, I think they'll take a jump. They have more dynamism. They have more guys dribble, pass, shoot. Mamu, Grimes, Sexton, like, I think that that's going to help them get to a different level. But defensively, I'm very fascinated because I still think there's this tension of JJ would probably love the switching big, that Kessler isn't quite that, but he does now have this massive tool at his advantage that he hasn't had previously, or at least not since early tenure with AD. And I think with his newfound experience, him going into this season, having a full summer to plot out the defense, like, I'm just really excited for what that's going to look like.
And JJ spending the summer in his basement diagramming plays, right? He's gonna come out for training camp ready to go. I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see what he can do with this team as well. All right, everybody, we're going to wrap things up there. We are running out of time. Appreciate all of you for joining us. I have saved the super chats we didn't get to. We'll get to those sooner rather than later. But again, heading out to Vegas for Summer League. Jovan's hitting the road right after this. I'm going to be heading out there tomorrow morning. If you guys see us, stop by, say hi. We're going to get into some stuff next week. We'll get back here for more episodes of the Lakers Collective. But if you haven't done so yet, please hit that subscribe button. Turn on those notifications as well. We appreciate all of you. And Pete, Jovan, as always, a privilege to talk basketball with you guys.
Like, absolutely. Having a blast doing this show with you guys.
Great to see you guys, Trevor. I guess I'll see you tomorrow at the game.
Yes, sir.
At Thomas and Mac. And Pete, we'll miss you, but we'll be back Monday, I think, probably. We'll figure it out. But everyone, enjoy your weekend, and shout out to the chat.
Yep. Thanks again, everybody. Till next time. See ya, and stay safe.